Hi, and welcome to the Man Panel. I'm your host, Michelle Marchant Johnson, and I'm so excited to have you here because I am featuring some of the world's best relationship experts in the entire world who happen to be men. And I have with me today a wonderful returning guest. He's been on some of my events before, and he's also an old friend of mine and colleague and someone that I respect very much. And that is the wonderful Mamoun Youssef. Welcome, Mamoun.
Thank you so much for having me, Michelle. It's great to be here.
So great to have you here. I'm so happy to reconnect with you, and I'm really excited about featuring your wisdom on this event.
Thank you so much.
This event is to help women to have more success in their communication, interactions, and relationships with men, and especially with that one man that might be the right man. And I really love your topic today. It's 5 ways to attract the one and repel the rest. So that's a hot topic. But before we jump in, I just want to give everybody a brief intro about you, Mamoun. Mamoun Youssef is an author, speaker, and coach on a mission to take every human being on earth through the psychological switch. He's the creator of the Meet and Marry the One and Marriage Made Easy programs, which have helped thousands of people develop deeply loving relationships based on a profound understanding of how the mind works that takes all the hard work out of your love life. Oh, we like that idea. He's also the host of the British TV show, The Quran Coach, and author of the #1 best-selling book, Inside the Soul of Islam. His online training programs, seminars, and writings are a source of inspiration for thousands of spiritual seekers of all faiths across the world. So welcome once again, Mamoun.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you are so welcome. I'm so glad you're here. And I'm really super excited about this topic. So we're going to be talking about 5 ways to attract the one and repel the rest. And I know the ladies' ears are perked up this topic.
Yeah.
Great. So Mamoun, I'm going to let you go ahead and jump right in. Tell us why you picked this topic and let's go into the 5 ways.
Yeah. So the reason I picked this topic and the reason this is so meaningful to me is because it's actually a breakthrough or a realization that I had before I met the one for me, right? Before I met my wife, it's funny because I come from a spiritual tradition, right? I'm a Muslim, and it was Ramadan a few years back, it must have been 2017 maybe, right? It was Ramadan, I'd been fasting all day and it was nighttime and there are special prayers we do at night. And in the middle of the night, I was on my knees and I was actually in the full prostrating position with my forehead on the ground. And I was just like, I'd been dating and I'd been speaking to people and nothing was clicking. And I couldn't decide, like I was, you know, I've spoken to a few people. I couldn't figure out what criteria I meant to be using all that. I was just in a bit of a confused state. And in that moment, I just realized, like, why am I trying to do this myself? Let's let the divine play a role here, right? Let's let the divine take over. I'm like, look, there are too many people on planet Earth for me to be able to figure out who the one is for me. I can't date 4 billion people and then figure out which one's the optimal one for me. And I also come from a spiritual tradition where I know that God is all-knowing and all-loving and is the only one who really knows. Out of the 7 billion people walking around on Earth, out of the 4 billion women walking around on Earth, which one of them is actually the optimal spouse for me? And it just kind of clicked. And in that moment, I did a really deep, heartfelt prayer. And I decided, it was the beginning of Ramadan, I decided I would do this every single night during Ramadan, right? And for some reason, it's like the kind of romantic idea that there's one person out there for you with the very practical realization that, well, hang on, there probably is on planet Earth one person who's the optimal one for you, but a human being can't figure that out. But mm-hmm. The divine absolutely knows it, right? I was like, oh, well, why don't I just ask for that? And I'd also realized that, you know, my whole life, or not my whole life, my whole single life, I've been praying to be married, to find someone really attractive that I'm really into. But it never occurred to me to just ask for the one who only God knows is the optimal spouse. And I was like, oh, of course. So I went ahead and did it. I made that prayer every night during that Ramadan. And the kind of the angst and anxiety around my singleness kind of faded away, because all of a sudden it was like, well, now I just need to show up, right? Now I just need to show up, and anyone who's not the one will be repelled and the one won't be. It kind of took the pressure off, you know, of trying to impress people and stuff like that. and it's kind of funny because I'll tell you a quick story, right? I'll tell you a quick story about my love life while I was single. At one point, I started talking with this kind of spiritually inclined Sufi girl who I knew from way back in the day, and I kind of reconnected with her, and I was like, oh, it could be her, right? We started talking, and we went out a few times, and at one point during dinner, like I was now starting to think, I actually made one of the mistakes here, which is to, as you're asking God for the one, to put a face and a name to it, right?
Right.
As soon as you start dating someone, you're like, oh, it's that one. Okay, God, I want to be with one, preferably the one I'm seeing right now, right? Well, I started making that mistake. So what happened is we went out on a completely normal date. We went to this place called Patisserie Valerie, right? Afterwards, and we were having cake and a cup of tea. It was all very sophisticated. I was wearing a nice shirt, everything. I was like, oh, this is going swell. It's kind of funny. At one point, have you ever had the thing where you're eating a bit of cake, and so there may be little crumbs of the cake, and then you try slurping tea? Well, I did that as she said something funny.
Oh, no.
And I started laughing and somehow inhaled some soggy cake with the tea, and I started coughing and actually spat out tea everywhere. And then started coughing my way through, and then I tried to play it cool, right? And I was like, and she was like, are you okay? Do you need to like sort your, you know, go to the bathroom? Like, no, I'm good. So what were you saying about your parents? and it was just a complete disaster. And I would say now a divinely ordained disaster, right? Because she obviously wasn't the one. And I couldn't have told that at the time, because when you like someone, you just always think that the person you like is the one, right?
Right.
And that kind of brings me, so the first, like the way is to just make a very clear intention that there is one person on planet Earth who's optimal for you. You don't know who it is. You'll never figure it out. But just making that intention kind of changes the game a little bit, because now you're not, it brings us on to number two, which is detachment. You're no longer attached to any one particular person. You're attached to, it's kind of like, I want to marry whoever the divine decides is the optimal person for me to marry, and no one else.
Mm-hmm.
So you automatically, it's almost like a divine hand will be at play, repelling people left, right, and center from you. And you don't need to take it personally anymore, right?
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, you don't need to take it, but it's like, oh, well, okay, I guess you weren't the one. By the way, a key way to know if they're the one, they think you are too, right? Very obvious when you think about it, but the person who's not the one won't be like pushing you away, right?
Right.
Soon after that incident, I got a very direct, actually mature, direct text after I, you know, texted her a couple of times, hey, you want to meet up again? She was just like, it's not going to work out between us. And I was like, okay, no problem. And it wasn't like a hard thing anymore. It was smooth. So the first thing is the optimal spouse prayer. The second thing is being detached from the outcome with any particular person,
mm-hmm.
which falls into place really naturally if you really are making the intention that you want the one and no one else, right? You might go on a couple of roller coasters before you meet the one, but that's great. And I'll give you a little nugget here, is that after you do meet the one, and I think a little bit later I'll tell you how you know if they're the one, right? But if you do meet one and you realize it, you've got this wonderful thing, which is that for the whole of the rest of your relationship, you don't have to have a wondering eye of like comparing, is the one I'm with, but you know, there's all these other people out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of goes away because you know that you made a really sincere meditation and prayer to be with the one, and you're with someone who is now the one, and it kind of like, there's something that happens, at least for a guy, I don't know if this is true for women, but for me, certainly, it was kind of like, the idea that I even need to think twice about any other woman is just gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because I prayed for the one, and I'm with the one, and now it's done, right? As long as Rashid is alive, I'm set, right?
Right.
Now, along the way, because you don't, here's the thing, unlike the movie The Secret, you don't make a prayer for the one, and then the first person you meet is the one. It doesn't quite work that way. You're still going to be talking to a few people, because there's probably, my belief here is that there are things you need to learn along the way before you're actually ready for the one. And mm-hmm. so you get a few trial runs first. God, in its divine wisdom, gives us a few trial runs to make sure we don't mess it up royally when we meet the one, right? And those trial runs are just other people who have some of the character traits and some of the things that you will ultimately want in the one, but they're not the one, right? Like the Sufi, the young Sufi lady I was into, she wasn't the one, but she certainly had some inner qualities that I really respected and that ultimately I later found in Rashida, but in a much more perfected form, in a way that was more perfect for me, right? So the third key here, so the first is the optimal spouse prayer. The second is being detached from any particular person being the optimal spouse. The third one for me, resilience. As you meet all of the people who aren't the one and you go on this little roller coaster of getting attached and falling in love maybe, or strong attraction, and then it doesn't work out for one reason or another. And at some point along the journey, I have this thing which I teach called the compatibility assessment, when you really like the person and they really like from you. And actually, I'll let you in on a secret. This is an idea I got from American Christians who I realized before, and I don't know if it's across the whole states or whatever, but it's certainly, it's present, is this idea of a premarital questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, you think you found the one, great. Let's make sure you want to live in the same continent. Let's see if you want to have kids. Let's see what religion or tradition you want them raised. Like, let's have those conversations. Now, this is really important. And in my younger years, I was really resistant to those kinds of questions. I was like, no, I'm in love. I want to, and by the way, I also got married really young and then got divorced, right? Having not answered any of these questions or thinking any of these things through, right? So I didn't want to make that mistake again. But the idea is you're going to need resilience along the way as you're seeing people, but you might actually fall for someone and be talking with them, but then you kind of have the mature conversation, the compatibility assessment, the premarital questionnaire, whatever you want to call it, where you ask the big questions. And there are two things here. Number one is it's really important that each person just answers these questions really honestly for themselves,
mm-hmm.
irrespective of how your partner answers them. And it's almost better that you kind of write them down and don't know how your partner responds, right? Just so you can have a really honest conversation. The second thing is not everything has to match up for you to, you know, for you to get married and have a long-term relationship, but you've got to acknowledge where you don't match up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For me and Rashida, she is a Dutch Moroccan, right? So she's her parents are from Morocco, but she was brought up in the Netherlands. Her ideal place to live is Rotterdam. I'm a British Pakistani. My parents are from Pakistan. I grew up in the UK. Rotterdam isn't on my top 10 places to live, right? Certainly wasn't when we met. I was like, I'd rather live in like San Diego or, you know, Japan. They're higher on my list, right? So we had to just have this honest conversation. Like, you want that? I want this. Now, there was a risk at that point that it wouldn't work out and it would be another heartbreak for both of us. But because we both answered really honestly, we got to the point where we were like, well, hang on a second. How important is living where you ideally want versus being with the person you really want? Like, is it like, am I so attached to the location I live that I could never live in Rotterdam? And the truth is, the answer to that is no. I'm an online entrepreneur. I can live anywhere in the world. Let's be honest.
Right, right.
And Rashida, funnily enough, had the same response. She also is a freelancer and can live anywhere. So it was kind of like, for some people, that would be a deal breaker. But for us, it wasn't. We both had deal breakers, but not with each other. Right?
Right.
Right. So one of her deal breakers was a smoker. I'm like, well, I have no interest in smoking and I don't think that's ever going to be. So it's kind of like it worked out that way. But resilience, that's another key.
Yeah, I think that's a key too, because whether you describe it as we have things to learn, which I think is often true. My husband and I talked about that after we met each other, that everything kind of made sense that led up to that, even though it didn't while we were going through it. Mm. In retrospect, in hindsight, we could see how all of the experiences we both had with other people and dating and that sort of thing had really given us clarity and vision and experiences that helped prepare us for each other. And I also believe, Mamoun, for me, finding the right person was also a spiritual journey that involved the divine. Mm-hmm. And I also believe sometimes when we set an intention like this, we set an intention or we have a clear vision of what we really want and desire. And then we kind of like ask God and kind of turn that over to him. I think we are sometimes tested. Like, I think we're tested to see, okay, are you gonna continue to trust in the abundance and in the grace that will allow you to have this in your life? Or are you gonna try to take the reins and control? I mean, I know for me, that was something where I wanted to take the reins and control. I wanted to be in charge because that worked in other aspects of my life, right? And so I think all of these things that we're talking about really go together, and whatever spiritual tradition or religious tradition people are coming from, I think the things we're talking about are really, really important. And then having the clarity about, you said you both had deal breakers, just not with each other. Mm. Same thing with my husband and I do think understanding something about each other's values, what's important to you, and being unafraid to have those conversations where you even risk having a breakdown or breakup. Mm. It takes courage, it takes faith, but that's how you really find out whether or not long-term it's going to be a compatible situation that's going to bless both of your lives rather than being fraught with a lot of conflict, misunderstanding, and unmet expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Should we take this a bit deeper? Okay. Here's one of the real keys that I only really discovered after coaching like a lot of people, right? There is a pattern we go through. And it's like, we can be resilient, and resilience is required for this journey, right? It's
mm-hmm, like, absolutely.
You're gonna have ups and downs, you're gonna have roller coasters. What I found happened is that as I was coaching people, they would develop resilience. They would develop like the main thing that I share, the psychological switch, it's the realization that feeling always comes from thought in the moment. And it's very tempting to believe, I'll be happy when I finally get married to the one. I'll feel loved when I'm with the right person. And the fact of the matter is, we feel happy the moment we start to think happy. We feel loved the moment we start to realize we are loved by the divine, right? And by the whole universe. Right? Thought can change, like our feelings change at the speed of thought, right? So what happens is when this realization really sinks in, resilience develops because all of a sudden you're not so attached to any particular person because you know they're not causing your feelings in reality. You're also not attached to a certain outcome. That was the second thing, right? It's like, oh, I've got to be with that person. Well, you can kind of develop this healthy detachment from the outcome. So all of these things start to, and now you can hold the intention of the optimal spouse and really live it. Now, what I discovered happened was when people would get this understanding, when they would really realize, wow, my felt experience of life doesn't come from my circumstances. It doesn't come from the stories I've held onto in the past. It comes from the present moment and what I'm thinking in the present moment. When people really start developing this, we become incredibly resilient. Now, we'll still go through the ups and downs. We'll still have times when I'm sad and upset and heartbroken. But there is a huge difference being heartbroken and thinking I'm upset because it broke off versus being heartbroken and realizing I'm upset because I'm thinking in an upset way about the breakup. It seems like the same, right? But there's a world of difference between the two. Because if you realize I'm upset because I'm thinking about the whole thing in an upset way, then it can, then you know for certain it can change at the speed of thought. 10 minutes later, you might feel differently. 1 hour later, you might feel differently. And if you think it's, I feel upset because of the breakup, the only way to stop feeling upset, please, will you take me back? Oh my God, I've got to find another person. Oh my gosh, somebody's got to take this pain away. You start running and becoming needy and weird. And that's where all the mistakes get made, mm-hmm. is in that zone of like, I'm heartbroken and upset. Let me fix it now by reaching out to the person that I've broken up with, or quickly going on all these apps and finding someone who I can just immediately have a relationship with. That's where all the mistakes happen. So that's one phase, right? I realize something else happens when people really go deep with this understanding, and they realize that, now I'm not saying, by the way, that we can control our feelings, right? Because if I knew a way you could 100% of the time control your feelings, I'd be selling it to you in a pill and I'd be a very rich man, right? I'm not saying we control it. We're still going to be upset sometimes and angry sometimes and full of love and happiness and joy at other times. What I'm saying is, let's not fall for the illusion that it's the circumstances of our lives that have more power than our own thinking, right? Because that's a trick. That's a trick that's the illusion. For me, that's the great spiritual illusion, is the illusion that our circumstances determine our feelings, right? Now, when people really get this, one phase is they become more resilient. The next phase, which is really secret number four here, is people would, like my clients, men and women who I take through this process, they would start to kind of just become a lot more happy. Because when you realize, wow, my happiness and how loved I feel isn't determined by my circumstances, well, I can be single and totally, utterly happy with life. And then people are like, well, I don't even need a spouse. I'm good, right? And if they really get this insight on a deep level, it's true. You can be totally happy, totally single, and live your best life, and all is good. And when you're in that high energy, this is the key, okay? I had a lot of clients who, when they were in that high energy, they didn't want to do the things required to find a spouse because they feel like, well, I don't need it because I'm totally happy. And I was like, dude, you have no idea how attractive you are right now. What we do is, when we're down in the dumps and we're facing heartbreak, we're feeling upset, we're feeling lonely, then we're like, let me pull my phone out and go on the apps and find a partner. And that's when your energy is the lowest and you're the most needy and in the worst possible place to go find a partner.
I know. And isn't it amazing how that energy comes across without us even realizing it or meaning for it to?
Completely. It's unspoken. It's not like, what did I write that was incorrect in this text? It's like, no, it's like, there were things in the text, but it's more like everything about you right now is giving the wrong signals, right? But now that same person, when they're genuinely happy, genuinely feel loved, genuinely confident, not fake it till you make it confident, but like feels really comfortable and confident in their own skin. Well, now all of a sudden you're super attractive. The only thing you've got to do now is show up. And that little distinction of basically stop trying to desperately, needily show up when you're feeling down. And when you're feeling great because of the personal growth that you've been through, when you're feeling awesome, you're feeling spiritual, you're feeling connected, that's when you show up. And when I say show up, I just mean literally go where the people are, go where the men are. Go now. You go on the dating app. Now you go to the networking event or the, you know, the social engagement, whatever it is. That's really been a game changer. It's really been a game changer because it's kind of counterintuitive. When you feel like I don't need a partner and I'm totally happy, you almost don't want. and then it can be kind of a negative association, because in the past you've been going to the apps and you've been going to the kind of dating events when you were feeling down, and now you're feeling high and you don't want to bring yourself down by going into the dating stuff, right? But right. That's like the key error, is when you're feeling high to stop the whole dating thing, and when you're feeling low to start looking for a partner. Now, it's kind of obvious when you think about it, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're in it, it's just that kind of take a step back. Like I do business coaching, right? One of the key things people don't realize is there's a difference between working in your business and doing your job, right? Like, I'm a coach and my job is actually coaching people. There's a difference between doing that and taking a step back and looking at the overall strategy and working on your business, right?
Right.
And in the same way, for a single person, there's a difference between being in your love life, you know, messaging people, you know, figuring out whether the person you're messaging is worth talking to, and then going on a date. There's a difference between being in your love life and then taking a step back and zooming out and kind of doing a strategic analysis of your love life.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you the upshot of all of this. A few months or like a year later, I met Rashida. We hit it off. We fall in love. We can't talk to each other enough. We're like on the phone she's in a different country, but we're on the phone for like 4 hours every night talking, and we never run out of things to talk about. And it's just getting better and better. And at some point we were having a conversation around it. This was after like, it was kind of a done deal, and you know, our families had met and we were like, you know, certainly getting married. We had a conversation about it and we realized that Ramadan, Rashida had a realization that she was just going to ask God to find the one for her. And that same Ramadan, during the night, we were both actually making the same prayer. Now, Rashida is a Dutch Moroccan. She lives in Rotterdam. I'm a British Pakistani. And at the time, I lived in London. We met at a conference in Portugal. There is no logical reason why we should have even met. Neither of us like have been back to that conference, right? That networking event.
Right.
It was completely random. And yet here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah. And this whole idea of letting go of attachment and allowing things to happen and being in that energy of confidence, being that energy in that energy of trusting, and yet engaging when you feel good, like you said, instead of when you feel bad, because that energy comes through, you're so much more likely to attract someone that's going to be so much better. Because it's the strangest thing, I swear, Mamoon, like we said, how an energy can come across through a text or an email, and you don't intend it to, but it comes through. And we've all had that experience of being around someone who's trying to sell us something or a date where there's a desperate energy, and you know they don't necessarily mean it to come through, but it's coming through and it's so repelling.
Totally, totally. And you know what? And that's why, like, I like the terms attract and repel, because attract is the right word. When you're vibing with that energy, when you've cleared up your own stuff, you've let go of your insecurities and fears and doubts and attachments to it happening on a certain timeline, when you've let go of all of that and you're just in the moment, you're completely automatically naturally attractive. And honestly, that's our natural state. And if I was going to give you the fifth and final key, it's to realize that presence and inner peace is your natural state, and it's intrinsically attractive. When finding the one isn't on your mind, it's not something you're worried about or concerned about, and you're showing up with that kind of attractive energy, with a clear mind, it's a done deal. It becomes absolutely inevitable. Strategically and systematically, you've got the things in place, right? Like I usually tell my clients, your mission. At the beginning, they don't believe me. They think I'm crazy. And they're like, oh, but this is impossible what you're saying. But I tell everybody, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to set this up so that you just go on a date every week. That's it. And if you aren't going on a date every week, we need to set things up in your life so that that becomes inevitable. It doesn't have to be a different person every week. It could, hopefully it'll be the same person several weeks in a row. And eventually it'll be the same person. And even now I'm still going on a date every week with my wife, Rashida, right? So I put that in place because it's kind of like a more neutral criteria to let you know if you're showing up. Because if you're showing up on the apps, if you're showing up on the websites, if you're showing up in person at the events, if you're if you've got the energy, if you're like you've got the energy of attraction, you'll get dates. It's inevitable. And everyone I've told at the beginning when they were struggling and they came to me for coaching was like, let's start with one date a month, right? That's what they were telling me.
Yeah.
But after they figure out, it's just literal strategic things, which of course you can't see when you're in it and when you're all, you know, attached and, you know, a little bit insecure, really, which we all are sometimes, right? When you're in that energy, you can't, and I'll tell you a quick story. Like Rashida, she found, the reason she ended up at that networking event is because a few months earlier, she was talking with a friend of hers who's a management consultant and a really good friend, right? And they were talking down, they were just sitting down and this is a friend of hers in the Netherlands and she works in big companies in the Netherlands as a management consultant. And they were just sitting down and having a girl talk and her friend just said, you know what, Rashida, let's just figure this out like I would help a client running a company. She was like, what? And they sat down and just said, okay, so you want to find a man, any criteria? He's like, okay, Muslim man. Does he have to be Moroccan? And she was like, actually for me, no. She's like, okay, well, that's a big thing because there's certain places in the Netherlands has a big Moroccan community. She's like, oh, so it doesn't have to be in the Netherlands. Boom. They just started strategically analyzing everything. And because of that, Rashida was like, okay, I'm going to go to more networking events and start finding my people, my tribe globally. And when you start socializing with your tribe, sooner or later, people are going to notice you. And then sooner or later, things are going to work out. And that neutrality of looking at your love life like you would look at a business or like you'd look at anything neutral out there, working on it instead of just being in it, that neutrality is so precious and so valuable and so easy when you have a clear mind. When you're not attached to the outcome, when you're not in the illusion that I'll be happy only when I find the right person, suddenly you can all of the insecurity fades away, and it just you realize you're on a journey of absolutely inevitably finding the one. You've got your vision and your prayer. You've got detachment from it being any one particular person. You've got resilience working in your favor because, you know, we share mindset stuff of how to develop that resilience and realizing feeling comes from thought in the moment, not from the situation you're facing, right? So resilience develops. Next, as you really go deep with the inner game stuff, you start to realize you can just be happy without any particular circumstance, without finding the one, still be happy. And simultaneously realizing that that doesn't mean you stop the journey of finding them. That's when you're your most attractive. And then finally, learning to kind of quiet down and have a quiet mind and look very neutrally at your love life so you can treat it like you would anything else. Like if you wanted to get in physical shape, there are just, if you're really emotional about it, it's really hard to do. But if you see it neutrally, you're just like, oh, well, I'll just eat right and train, right? Stuff like that. So it's kind of the same way. And the moment we drop our insecurities, which for me, really is the moment we truly deeply realize that our experience moment to moment comes from this divine gift called thought. The moment that sinks in, our internal world changes and we just become so much more attractive without trying, without faking, without pretending. And it's no longer a matter of how do I make the other, how do I look like I'm not needy to the other person? how do I pretend to be detached? It's like,
okay, right.
It's like, well, the fact that we're asking the question means we've got a bit more inner work to do, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This is really great. This is really beautiful. And I really appreciate you sharing a lot of your personal story too, Mamou, because I think it gives people hope. I think your story, my story, hopefully gives the women listening here on the event hope. Because I feel like that's also a really key piece, is to have hope and to have faith, even if that hope sometimes feels like it's a little glimmer.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just someone who believes that we don't have this kind of desire for partnership or to be married just to torture us. I just don't believe that's the reason we have it. I believe that we have it, if that's a strong desire for someone listening, I believe that also is a gift that also can help us to have the resilience to go forward when you're going through that roller coaster ride. And having someone to guide you as a coach to support you through this process can make it so much easier. It's kind of like when you're talking about working in your business or on your business or in your love life or on your love life. It's sometimes when we have another set of eyes and ears to help that we can kind of see things, because we all have blind spots. You know, we look at ourselves in the mirror every day. We think we're seeing ourselves clearly and what's going on clearly. We're not seeing the side view, or God forbid, the rear view, right? We're not seeing that.
Right, exactly.
And so it's like you were telling me before we started that you'd taken a vacation, and while you'd taken this vacation and turn off all the, you know, the texts and the messaging and everything like that, you started having all of these brilliant ideas for your business and taking things to the next level and that sort of thing. It's sometimes we have to kind of like pull back, and a coach can really help you to do that and guide you through that process. Absolutely. And that's why I think you and I are both big believers in coaching. We met in the coaching world. We've both been doing it for a long time. It's why it can be so powerful. And I really, really love what you've shared today, Mamoun. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And you're absolutely right on this. Like, I had a coach as I was going through this journey. Rashida was being coached by her friend, but like really like with a pen and paper, figuring it out, right? And you know, I love that you mentioned the thing about hope, because yeah, Rashida and I were both in our 30s when we met and when we got married. And I've spoken to so many women. I work a lot, of course, in the Muslim community. And a lot of women just think like, oh no, I'm in my 30s. And I know, of course, your story as well, right? And it's kind of like, there is so much spiritual and personal growth that happens on this journey. I wouldn't change it for the world. Like, if I could have had it easy and just met Rashida in our 20s or whatever, it's like, no, it's really good that it happened this way. And I'm really appreciative. And I know Rashida is as well.
So. Yeah, well, I believe, Mamoun, that's absolutely right. And I believe that for many of us, the journey of love, to love, becoming love, experiencing love is the journey of our lives. It's really the journey. It really is the journey. You know, the love, if you're of a religious persuasion, the love of God, the love of other people, the love of a spouse, the love of children, loving yourself, you know, the journey of love is where some of the most profound and important, if not the most profound and important lessons of life lie in our lives.
Yeah. Those who are loving are loved by the most loving. So love those on earth and those in heaven will love you. It's a teaching of the prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him. And yeah. You just brought it to mind.
Thank you. So Mamoun, I want to give you a chance to share a little bit about your free gift, and there will be a link right below where you're listening or watching from. And I know we've just like barely scratched the surface of what Mamoun has to share. He has an incredible body of work. And like I said, someone I've known for a really long time. So I'm sure you'll want to stay in touch with him. So tell us a little bit about the gift, Mamoun.
Yeah, thank you so much. So basically, if you go to meethimandmarryhim.com, you'll be able to check out a free kind of masterclass where I go through some of the principles and go a little bit deeper into the inner game things I was talking about, of how to kind of develop the resilience and develop the mindset that makes it so that you just become your most attractive self, right? I always say, if you want to find the one, become the one, right? Because it'll make the whole thing easier. And so that whole training is available right there on meethimandmarryhim.com.
That's great. Thank you, Mamoon. And there's a link for everybody here too, to make it really easy and convenient. Right. You can just click on that link and go right there.
Awesome.
So, Mamoon, thank you so much for sharing so generously. It was really wonderful to reconnect with you. And I know this will bless a lot of people's lives. So really appreciate your contribution to the event.
Thank you so much for having me here. And bless you. The work you're doing and the events you put on are just incredible. They're exactly what people need. And I wish you absolute success with this and with all of the future panels and that you do. The work that you do is incredible. And, you know, I'm a big fan.
Thank you, Mamoon. Appreciate that so much. And it's mutual. So everyone, we want to also thank you for joining us, because we know that the fact that you're here speaks highly of you, and that you're the kind of person that wants to learn and grow and is committed to having an extraordinary love and an extraordinary life. And so we tip our hats to you and appreciate you being here for the Man Panel, and hope you'll join us for more. Take care and bye for now.